Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
The beginning of this song. There's a little intro and then all of a sudden.
Yeah. All those, the lasers.
The lasers.
There's some lasers.
You gotta love lasers in a song.
Oh, the
why laser. Don't we have more songs with lasers?
I don't, because the laser show took them in Boston. Pedroia, the laser show.
Ah,
what a great nickname that is, by the way.
The laser show. How about our boy Brandon Stokely? Firing off some lasers of his own.
Really?
My best friend Peyton Manning.
Dropping fireballs.
Was he?
Saying that this is the year that the Broncos break through and beat the Chiefs. Says they'll beat them this year.
Really?
The 9-game streak will end.
Okay.
Well, maybe they'll go to 10 and then they'll win.
Right.
9 times.
No, they're going to have to end it at 9 because they play the Chiefs first here.
Chiefs first
here. I can't see them winning at Arrowhead. So, what about the idea? You know what it's like to win a Super Bowl. You've won 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's like to win a Super Bowl and come back the next year and not win.
Right.
You know what it's like to win a Super Bowl, come back the next year and repeat.
Mm-hmm.
What about the idea that the Chiefs will be vulnerable? Because it's so hard to repeat.
Well, I mean,
when's the last time a team repeated? 2004, 2005? Patriots back in the early 2000s?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, it happened with the Cowboys, right? They repeated in the early 90s. And then it happened with us, Denver. And then it wasn't until, you know, mid-2000s. It hasn't happened since. So, yeah, it's difficult. Mike, I think the bigger difficulty, like, I think there's two things that go kind of hand in hand. One, injuries. I mean, anytime you're deep in the playoffs all the time, you play another 3 or 4 games. There's, you know, less recovery time. All that kind of stuff is like, that's real. That happens. And then I think it's complacency. You know, it's what I've always been impressed with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, their lack of complacency, like the fact that they're still driven even after all their success. And so I think those things happen to teams. I mean, we saw it with the Cleveland Browns, right? They went 7-8-1 or whatever, and everybody was talking about Super Bowl hype, and next thing you know is, you know, everybody's talking about how great they are. They're like the dream team. Or go back to the dream team with the Eagles when they had, you know, when they had Michael Vick and Shady McCoy, and they had a bunch of, remember, they might go undefeated. They're the dream team. Like that stuff is, you can start, you know, believe in the press clipping, so to speak, and that stuff will haunt you.
I guess to me, it comes down to find me the last Super Bowl winning team that is set at quarterback, entrenched at quarterback, to have had a giant letdown the next year.
The winning team.
The winning team. Okay, this is what it's all about. The idea is that, well, you've won, you become satisfied,
mm-hmm.
and you come back the next year and it's just not the same. Give me the last team that was set at quarterback. Cause you know, okay, the Broncos, for example. Okay, you know, you win 2015 with Peyton Manning, the next year you get Trevor Siemian. Okay, that doesn't count. Philadelphia wins the Super Bowl with Nick Foles. The next year they come back and they're back to Carson Wentz. Would it be, I mean, the Ravens, when they won with Flacco, let that one just settle in. Roll that around your palate.
Flacco's tall.
When the Ravens won the Super Bowl with Joe, who played really well during that playoff run, Joe Flacco.
He did play great.
But you can't put Joe Flacco in that category, can you?
No, probably not.
All right, so would it then be the Giants? Do you have to go back to the Giants and Eli Manning?
But Eli Manning, This is going to be hard to say. Eli Manning was great during those playoff runs. Mm-hmm. He was great in the Super Bowl. But did anybody ever consider him a top five quarterback at any time during his career? Like, he's like, if you said, hey, give me your top five guys playing right now, was he in that conversation?
No, but he is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I would imagine
all right,
he is.
Well, then he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. So if he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, then I think he was a great quarterback.
Okay, but give me one other. Okay, let me ask you this. One other Hall of Famer that played quarterback that during his tenure of playing, he wasn't a top five quarterback.
Repeat that again.
So give me another quarterback who is in the Hall of Fame that while he was playing, at any time he was considered a top five quarterback in the league while he was playing. And Marino was a top five.
Right.
Jim Kelly was a top five. John Elway was a top five. I mean,
is Philip Rivers going to be in the Hall of Fame? Was Philip Rivers ever considered a top five quarterback?
I don't know that Philip Rivers is going to make the Hall of Fame.
I think he will.
He's got no playoff success.
I think you can find other players in the Hall of Fame that Curtis Martin went to the Hall of Fame.
I understand that, but
and you can find Curtis Martin type quarterbacks out there, and I think Philip Rivers.
Do Curtis Martin type quarterbacks get into the Hall of Fame? Like, number compilers will get into the Hall of Fame, but show me a Curtis Martin type quarterback. Like, and don't say Dan Marino, because Dan Marino was not, that dude was different. I know that he doesn't have a world championship, but the dude was different. Give me a number compiler, you know, give me the Jim Craig or Jim Zorn or, you know, give me these number compilers that were really good quarterbacks. And how many of them are in the Ken O'Brien world? Like, how many are in the Hall of Fame?
I got to look at the list. I'll have to look at the list. I'll get back to you on that one.
Because I would say at that position, Mike, that probably more than anything else, because there's so little that separates it, there's a lot that goes into playoff success and all that kind of stuff.
All right, I'll look at the list.
And I don't know that to be sure, but
Warren Moon never won a championship.
Right.
Fran Tarkenton.
He went to three or four of them.
Yeah, well. Jim Kelly never won a Super Bowl.
Four straight
Super Bowls. Dan Fouts. There's a great example. Just a great stat compiler.
Okay. So they do exist.
They do exist. They do exist.
All right. I'm glad we had that little.
Coming up next. Boy, ESPN does not believe in the Nuggets' chances when it comes to these new-look NBA playoffs. That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans here. People care about three things when buying a vehicle. Number one, price. Siltahar Motors has the best prices and financing options, such as zero money down or 0% financing for 84 months. Number two, selection. Siltahar has over 1,800 new and used cars on site and at sthmotors.com. And number three, location. Siltahar is right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth, and they will deliver any vehicle to your home for a test drive or after purchase. Visit sthmotors.com and get everything you want out of a dealership.
Well, we eagerly await the return of the NBA and NHL playoffs, although the NBA will play their first eight games will be to finish out the regular season. I know why they're doing it. They're doing it like everything else that we've learned throughout all this. It's all about money. They're trying to play enough regular season games so they can satisfy regional...
Right, RSNs.
RSNs, regional sport networks. For those regions that get to watch their teams play. So that's what this is all about. Because, mm-hmm. Mark, what is the biggest reason to follow where a team is seated? for the playoffs? What's the biggest reason?
To follow where they're seated?
Well, why is it important? Why is it important where you're seated?
Well, I mean,
you, home court.
Right, home court. And then obviously you're getting your matchup against a team that's lesser seeded than you. Or
right.
Yeah, but yeah.
But mainly it's the idea that you want to be able to have home court advantage.
Right.
That tends to be the biggest reason. Well, home court isn't going to be a factor in these playoffs.
Yeah.
So why do these games really matter for seeding? They really don't. Other than you're right, who do you end up playing? But that isn't such a that isn't really something you can control.
Right.
You know, by playing out these final eight games. What you'd be playing for is the chance to have home court advantage. So they're playing these eight games. Now, ESPN ran a bunch of simulations as to what's going to happen in the playoffs. They do not think highly of the Nuggets' chances. They have the Nuggets with their best chance of finishing in the third seed, and the most likely opponent based on odds is Oklahoma City in the first round. And they have the Nuggets as an underdog.
Right.
In that series. They only have the Nuggets as a 7% chance to make it to the conference finals. Only a 0.9% chance to make it to the finals and a 0% chance of winning the NBA finals. Ryan Hollins, former NBA player, outstanding NBA analyst on ESPN, was on with Nick and Cecil last night here on The Fan. He talked about the Nuggets.
Denver's a tricky team. The reason that I'm not necessarily favoring Denver for a championship, but they're a deep team. They're selfless. And I do credit Jokic for one big thing. The way that he plays and the reason that he was considered at an MVP level last year was every player on that roster seemed to be injured or hurt. And Jokic was just making plays and diving guys up. He's a bit of a true point center. I know some people throw that term around loosely, but he's one of the few point centers we've seen in our day. So he's dangerous in the sense that you can put whatever four guys out there with him, and you're going to get a good shot at the basket every single time that you're on the court.
All right. So what are you thinking about their chances as you start looking ahead?
I don't think. One, the one criticism I've had of the Nuggets, and this hasn't changed in the last couple of years, is in a game where you're rewarded for having knockdown shooters, I just don't feel like they got any knockdown shooters. Anybody who can consistently knock down open threes. And, you know, let's face it, that's where this game has gone to a degree. Is it's gotten away from the big man. It's gotten away from the physical nature of being an inside post player and all that stuff. And it really has been ball rotation and who can knock down 3-point shots, you know, on a consistent basis. And so for me, I mean, Jokic, the Joker, is a great player. He's got unbelievable court awareness. You know, he's one of those guys that underwhelms you until you look at the box score at the end of the game and you're like, how do you have 29 and 20? Like it just is, it's the way he plays the game, but he's a great facilitator of the basketball and all those things. But if you facilitate the basketball and you don't have somebody who consistently can knock down a three, what does it matter that you can facilitate? That to me is their one big weakness that they've never truly solved.
I trust Jokic, although I am curious to see how this new look Jokic looks and plays.
Skinny Jokic?
Skinny Jokic.
There's a
difference between being skinny and being in shape. Okay?
Right.
He's skinnier, but he'd become an all-star. He'd become a great player by playing a certain way, looking a certain way.
Yes.
Now all of a sudden he looks dramatically different, and he's going to unveil this new look body.
Right.
After 4 months off.
Do you have any idea how big Jokic's head is?
Well, it takes one to know one.
Right. Here's my point being this, Mike. I always get concerned with guys when they get too skinny because there's a head to body weight ratio that must be maintained
right,
at all times.
Right. Like, could you imagine if all of a sudden I went crazy and dropped like 30 pounds.
Like, what do you
weigh? And I got down to like one.
Let's say I got down. What do you weigh right now?
I'm about like 210.
210. See, I think
so
that.
So let's say if I went down to like 180.
Yeah, see, I think your head to body weight rate, you're like a, you cannot go below 190.
No. You're right.
You cannot.
That's like an odd into the toothpaste.
There's just a certain weight where it's all of a sudden like, regardless of what, you know, what doctors say and what everybody says about, you know,
BMIs.
Yeah,
and all that stuff.
There's a certain weight that you can't go below because you are just going to look. I mean, it's just not going to look good.
I think if I ever got down to like 180, I think I'd just keep falling down.
Yeah. It would be horrible
for you. I just
keep
pitching forward.
So I just worry about, like, is his head too heavy? His body can't keep up? Is it, you know, I mean, it's going to be labored. I worry about that.
But see, so I'll put him in the I don't worry about category.
Okay.
But then, hey, you know, this neutral court thing does not help the Nuggets. It just doesn't.
Mm-mm. Well, you know what doesn't help the Nuggets? Not playing in altitude.
Exactly. The Pepsi Center.
Huge advantage
is a thing.
Yeah,
it's a thing. Teams,
it's like Coors Field, man. It's like Coors Field. Guys don't want to pitch here. Guys, you know, they worry about balls. You know, fly balls flying out of the ballpark. They worry about that stuff.
Now it's not an automatic. Portland wasn't concerned about Game 7 here. It didn't matter. But by and large, generally,
sure.
The Nuggets have one of the more unique, you know, you go around the NBA, you go around NBA, NHL these days, you can all of a sudden be blindfolded and just dropped into an arena with no signage. Good luck trying to figure out what city you're in, right? Mm. I mean, they all look the same.
Right.
But if you're looking at in the NBA where there are examples of a genuine home court advantage, I'd put Denver right up there, and they don't have that. I like their depth, but in a format like this, after you've sat out so long, and the long grind of the season, I don't think depth really matters as much. It's about your stars. It is about your stars and riding your stars. And while I trust Jokic, who is going to be that second star? It's gotta be Jamal Murray. And up until this point, he's just been too much of an up and down, inconsistent guy. Now, if this is a guy, if you're going to tell me that over the course of the playoffs, Jamal Murray's going to come out, he's going to average, 25, 26 points per game. Okay. I like the Nuggets' chances. But until I can see that, I'm skeptical. All right. What do you think? Hit us up. RamosLaw.com. Text line 303-713-1043. Four down territory coming up next.
Is four down territory.
Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here.
We're on to Cincinnati.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
You want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the out of here.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
Newton backs up. Looking end zone. Has a receiver. Leaping grab, Moore, touchdown.
That is DJ Moore.
That's to the right side, Newton to Moore.
Panthers radio, Count Kurt Warner, among the folks who believe that Cam Newton to the Patriots will be a great thing for Cam. Warner talking about his own experience where after his days with the Rams, many people counted him out. Then he went on to have success with both the Cardinals and Giants, but especially the Cardinals. So what do you think of what Kurt Warner has to say? Do you see some similarities between Newton and Warner?
Yeah, well, if you remember, like, Kurt Warner was the toast of the town, you know, won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden just kind of dissipated in St. Louis. Then he had that opportunity to play with the Giants, but they drafted, or they didn't draft, the Chargers drafted Eli Manning. There was a trade. They got Eli Manning toward the end of the season. Kurt Warner was playing with a thumb injury. He wasn't playing very well. They moved on from Kurt Warner, and they went to Eli, and the rest is history. Then he goes to Arizona as a backup, and he starts rotating. Remember, they drafted the USC quarterback, Matt Leinart. And eventually, you know, Matt Leinart, you know, didn't perform, and then Kurt Warner took over and solidified a Hall of Fame career. So You know, there's humility that is involved when you kind of drop off and you have some injury history and you're not playing very well, and then you've got to go reprove yourself. So, yeah, I can see where Kurt Warner is saying, yeah, that's kind of like what I went through, and it revitalized my career. I think a lot of us who have been kicked to the curb over the years by their original team, there is a motivating factor that goes into there, and I don't doubt that Cam Newton is completely motivated and has been humbled to a degree. What's the old saying in professional sports? There's two types of athletes, those who are humbled and those who are about to be. Well, he's been humbled.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
Tua loads up, looks long, tries to find Jerry Jeudy. He's got it. He'll break a tackle. He's going to go in. Touchdown, Alabama. 62 yards right back at you. And Alabama is within a point as Tua to Jerry Jeudy allow the Crimson Tide fans to start breathing again here in Santa Clara.
Bama Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, only a handful.
Son of a bitch, dug in like an Alabama tick.
Only a handful of first round picks have been signed. A year ago at this time, just about every first round pick had been signed. This year, only a handful. The majority remain unsigned, including Jerry Jeudy. Now, it's clear that these unique times that we and the NFL are living in certainly has an impact on what's going on. But at what point do these rookies, especially Jerry Jeudy being unsigned, become a thing?
It becomes a thing when all of a sudden they're not in camp. Like right now, they're probably working hard on selling tarps to cover the first eight seats, right? Sponsorship tarps. It's all the goods. Go right back to Little League. You know, when you have the tarps you got to hang up for the little banners you hang up, right? Before every Little League game, you just hang up. Each corner's got a little, one of them little hooky things, you know, one of them, and then you.
Hooky things, huh?
Yeah, it's a hooky thing.
Is that the next Man of 101?
Yeah. How to hang a
how
banner
to hang
with
hooky things?
Things. What do you call those?
Little, I know what they're called. Yeah.
Carabiners or something like that?
No, as soon as I hear the name, I'll.
Hooky things.
They're not hooky things.
And you hang them on the chain link fence before every game, and then everybody knows who the team sponsor is and stuff. That's what the Broncos and every other team are doing right now. They're selling banners, and they're going to put hooky things on the corners, and they're going to pin them up around the stadium.
Most of these rookie deals are already slotted. You know what each guy's going to make. It's not like each guy gets to hold out for his own deal. It's the way it's collectively bargained that these spots are slotted. However, if the projections are that the cap is going to go down $30 million next year in the NFL,
mm-hmm.
could you see NFL teams sitting back going, whoa, 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 whoa? It's kind of like the baseball thing. Hey, the deals that we agreed upon were all with the idea that we weren't going to be in a pandemic.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, we're in a pandemic. It's greatly affecting the economics of our sport. We got to revisit the rules.
Well, they're going to have to revisit.
Of what we're paying these guys.
Well, they're going to revisit the rules next year when their cap goes down. Not this year. Right?
Well, these guys are going to be signed for four and five. Well, rookies, five-year deals.
Yeah.
With year two will
but
be.
You don't know what the cap is going to be.
With a much different cap.
You don't know what the cap's going to be until you get to the cap.
The cap is the cap.
Cap, yeah. You can't manipulate the cap before the cap needs to be manipulated.
Next in four down territory.
Third down. Hey, that's Tampa need to help me buy a house in Tampa with a long-term deal.
Shaq Barrett from
CSU
is doubtful that he's going to be able to get a long-term deal.
Hmm.
Which, okay, rinse and repeat. We go back to the same story. Tough year, tough offseason. To be a free agent, or in this case, a guy like Shaq Barrett, who has waited patiently to get his big payday.
Right.
And unfortunately, his chance to get a big payday comes at a time where there's so much financial uncertainty going around his game. Sign the franchise tag, get paid big, and then just try to bet on yourself and come back and do it next year. Because I just don't see how he's going to be able to get, you know, that huge deal with all kinds of guaranteed money, and it's spread out over 4 or 5 years. Bucks aren't going to do that.
Here's what team will.
Right. Here's the thing that benefits Shaq. He's going to play. He's going to get whatever he gets this year. I don't know what that figure is. It's got to be around $18, $19 million, I would think, for a premium edge rusher, right?
Yep.
Something like that. Based upon what they have on the offensive side of the ball and what they do defensively under Todd Bowles, that dude is going to put up big numbers again. Like, they are a blitz happy. He's going to get one-on-one issues. They've got Vita Vea inside. They've got Jason Pierre-Paul on the other edge. They've got Ndamukong Suh inside. They've got two of the best inside linebackers in all of football. I mean, just believe me when I tell you, I did a couple Tampa games last year. They are legit roster-wise. I don't know where Pro Football Focus has them. I mean, you know, where the Pro Football Focus has their roster ranked. Probably really bad.
Tampa?
Yeah.
They're in the top five.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they don't have Bowlesy, though. How do they get the top five without Bowlesy?
Next.
I put all my arms and legs into and let him trust.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
I feel a little frustrated at this point right now, you know, because I come off the injury, I'm not getting a chance to play, and then I'm sick. I miss a couple days of practice, and now I feel like I put myself way behind where I need to be. So I'm struggling in you know, my own mind, trying to, you know exactly what my role is.
Johnny Manziel says football is in his past, and he's okay with that. Let's say Johnny Manziel came out of Texas A&M. Let's say he had his head on straight, his priorities were in order, and this was a guy that was committed to football.
Okay.
You think you could have worked out for him?
No. I just don't. I don't. I was never. He was.
You're never a fan of his game.
His game is just not. His game is not disciplined. His game was total schoolyard. You know, it was like when you play football in the street with your buddy and say, "Hey, man, go down to the car with a broken antenna and take a left." You know, that's was his game. It just wasn't, his game wasn't, it wasn't disciplined in college.
And if it's not disciplined and you're 6 foot, you're barely 6 foot tall, you know, 180.
Right.
And you're not going to just be able to play, to your point, your example, street yard football and get away with it.
This game at this level is too hard. It's played.
He's not tall.
It's played by the best athletes, you know, in their respective sports in the world. It just doesn't work that way. You can't just go. You know, I always get nervous when I hear guys that say, "Man, I'm just gonna go out and ball."
Right.
As soon as I hear that, I'm like, "Oh gosh, here we go." This guy has no clue. Zero.
Yeah, it's your old 70-30 ratio, and I don't know if Johnny Manziel was ever gonna get to that 70% when it comes to playing quarterback in the NFL. All right. Well, we wish him well in whatever his future endeavors are. That'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. Coming up next, when it comes to guys in our business, nobody knows Ian Desmond better than Patrick Saunders. What does he think of Desmond's decision to opt out of playing baseball this year? Patrick Saunders joins us next. Well, the big news locally here is that Ian Desmond deciding, with a combination of concerns about the coronavirus and also with some of the issues that are going on socially in our world, has decided not to play for the Rockies this season. Joining us to talk about it is our Rockies insider covering the Rockies for the Denver Post. It is Patrick Saunders. Patrick, good morning.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Patrick, how much of an actual blow is this to the Rockies? Obviously, Ian Desmond is a versatile player, so how much does this hurt them from a roster standpoint?
Truthfully, I don't think it hurts him a lot. I think his value to the team is kind of secondary to the statement he made, Mark. The way I envisioned it, I saw Desmond probably playing part-time left field, kind of splitting time with Ramel Tapia, getting a lot of bats against left-handed pitching. But let's face it, you know, for 5 years, $70 million contract that the Rockies gave Desmond, he was entering his fourth year of that deal. You know, let's just be honest. He's been disappointing. And I certainly wasn't looking at Desmond to be a linchpin or anything for the Rockies during a regular season or even during this short sprint of a season.
What was your reaction when you read his statement on why he decided not to play?
Well, you know, originally when I first read it and my attention came upon it last night, I completely understood it when he was talking about his pregnant wife, his family, all of those things. I get that completely. And I respect his, you know, his decision. I was very interested to see the rest of his Instagram post where he talked about civil rights, about the George Floyd murder, about being very outspoken about all of those things. I respected it immensely. I was a little bit surprised by it. But as Ian said in the Instagram post, and I'm paraphrasing here, a lot of that stuff was bottled up inside him. I mean, he basically, in my viewpoint, has been carrying these thoughts around for a long time, pardon me, and they all just kind of came spilling out when he made this very, I'm sure, difficult decision to not play baseball this year.
Yeah, I think that there will be more to follow. There's already been some guys who have opted out this year from various teams. I think there will be more to follow. You know, what do you say to the critics, Patrick, that say, well, you know, you should play and it's your responsibility to play? And I think everybody has, you know, their own issues that they have to deal with and their own decisions to be made. And I fully respect him deciding he didn't want to play. It wasn't worth the risk. Me personally, I would play, but that's just me. Everybody has that right. So, you know, what do you say to the critics who have come out and bashed Ian Desmond for not showing up?
Well, I have two points for the critics. Those critics who came out on social media last night and just were basically rejoicing because they don't think he's a good ball player, and they totally missed the mark of what he was trying to say. So I just dismissed those kind of critics as pretty shallow. The critics are saying that he's basically kind of given up on his team and his teammates. I can understand a little bit where they're coming from, but I also understand that unless there's something I don't know about, you know, Desmond's going to forego the prorated salary. So he's giving up quite a bit of money to be with his family. And, you know, I think we get lost in a lot of this with professional athletes sometimes. And Mark, you would know about this. You know, they're human beings. They're not just commodities. They do have family. They do have kids. He has a pregnant wife. There are priorities in life. And I understand that being a strong teammate and being part of the baseball community is important. But I would say to those people in this very uncertain time where we all have fears and concerns and everybody's dealing with it differently, I think when somebody makes as bold a statement as Ian Desmond did, you may disagree with it, but I think you have to respect it.
Busy with our Rockies insider, Patrick Saunders from the Denver Post. His contract has become a source of derision, frustration among Rockies fans. Have you had conversations with him at all about the amount of scrutiny, the amount of criticism that he has received? How has he responded to all that over the last couple of years?
Truthfully, I never got very close with Desi, and I tweeted this last night. Desi, I'm going to be honest with you, is not a very easy guy in the clubhouse from a media perspective. He can be very off-putting. He could be a jerk, frankly. I mean, there were times when he and I connected, but it was always a struggle with him. I always felt like I was jumping through a variety of hoops. I always felt like Desi was testing me. So I never really got the sense of what he felt about the wrath of a lot of those Rockies fans, many of whom booed him. You know, the Rockies fans aren't the type to boo very often, but Desi has caught their wrath through the years. But my guess is it got to him. It bothered him a lot. He never told me that specifically, but he's a very proud man. He's a very intelligent man. But I could tell that he didn't take criticism well. I'm sure that that contract, which, let's face it, he didn't play up to the value of the contract. He's been a disappointment. I'm sure that's bothered him.
So take us through what's going on with the Rockies right now and just your overall assessment of what you think they're going to be throughout this 60-game schedule.
Wow. You know, that's the big question for the team as a whole, Stinky. You know, 60 games makes it so wide open. You know, for the Rockies, I think their offense, if they can get hot, and who knows how they're going to come out of the gate in a 60-game sprint, they've got the offensive potential to be a very competitive and very dangerous team. My biggest concern is pitching. They're going to need a lot of depth because if early on, they're not simply not going to have time to build up arms to go six, seven innings, at least at the beginning of the 60 games. We're going to see, you know, three, four, five inning outings for, you know, a good three, 4 weeks because they simply are not going to have the pitch count up, which means they're going to have to rely on a lot of depth. And I just don't think the Rockies have enough quality pitching depth to really make a run at this. I could be wrong, but to me, that's the big issue with the Rockies. And one of the things they're going to have to make a decision on, they're going to have to do this quickly. And Bud Black talked to us about this yesterday. You know, they're going to have to look at things differently. They're going to have to make some more, not split decisions, but more gut decisions. You know, if Brian Shaw, for instance, or Jake McGee or Wade Davis, the three veteran relievers who were so bad last year, if they repeat that this year, you know, the Rockies can't say, oh, I'll give them time, they're veterans, they'll figure it out. No, you can't do that. If guys are struggling, particularly relievers or people like that, you're going to have to get them out of there quickly and mix and match and go with what you can because you can't afford a 10, 11-game slump if you want to do anything toward a postseason.
Is Bud Black suited for this kind of sprint? Because let's face it, these baseball managers – you know, they're used to the big picture, the long haul. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And now all of a sudden, they got to start to manage, you know, like their football, hockey, and basketball counterparts. You think Bud is suited for that kind of mentality?
That's a great question. And I'm honest going to tell you, I'm not sure. I think, and as much as I admire and like and respect Bud Black as a person, as a baseball guy, sometimes I think he's overly patient. And I don't know if that's coming from upstairs from Jeff Breidich and company or if that's just Bud Black being old school baseball. But I think that's an excellent point. Bud Black, like everybody else, is going to have to make adjustments. He indicated yesterday that he probably will be less patient. I think he's going to have to be. Whether he will be, whether he's going to be able to adjust to this, I think we're going to have to wait and see. But I think that's a very legitimate question.
All right, Patrick, man, we really appreciate you, buddy. Thanks so much for the insight.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me on.
Patrick Saunders, our Rockies insider from the Denver Post. So, all right, so let's take a look now. So you'll have your outfield now. Boy, there's a lot of pressure on David Dahl to
perform. Be healthy.
No, not
he'll
just
always
be
perform.
Healthy. Yeah,
yeah.
There's no question that if healthy,
right.
The production's going to follow. This guy's just a natural. He really is.
You know, my son played against him in Double A years ago, several years ago. And he was just like, there's very few, you know, I mean, baseball, there's very few guys that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy is, you know, most of the, usually you're poking holes in a guy. He's like, this guy can play.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is a five-tool guy. As a matter of fact, Daniel was throwing the other day because he's throwing all the time, you know, and we're talking to a bunch of teams. But he was throwing and in the facility he was throwing in, Arenado was in there, Trevor Story was in there, McMahon was in there, and he said he watched, you know, from afar BP in the cage, and he was like, Arenado's got zero holes in his swing. He's like, that dude, his bat stays through the strike zone. Like the entirety, like it just sounds different when he hits the baseball, you know? Yeah, you're going to, I mean, Trevor Story's going to run into him because he's got, you know, he's got that swing. But he's like, Arenado is a tough out. There's no question.
All right, so you've got Dahl. This is a great opportunity now for Tapia.
Yeah.
to show what he can do,
mm-hmm.
get regular at bats. Charlie Blackman might be your DH.
Charlie Blackman being the DH?
Well,
your leadoff, your guy that's been your leadoff?
Yeah.
Really? Well, who's going to replace Charlie in right field?
Well, they like that kid Hilliard. Or is Hilliard your DH?
I don't know. I don't really know, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know
you
what?
Can take
no,
Charlie
right.
out of your
in,
lineup.
In a 60
every...
game, you know yeah. what? Maybe in 162 games, you're like, hey, we got to find a way to preserve Charlie.
The other thing is, didn't they pay him last year?
Yeah, in a 60 game, you're right. 60 games, put him in right field, yeah. ride him.
Right.
So you got Dahl, Blackman, Tapia.
Right.
Okay. All right. This is KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont, Denver.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.